Drinking water, invasive species, toxic pollution, just some of the challenges facing our water here in the Great Lakes, and the focus of a conference happening this week by Healing Our Waters, Great Lakes Coalition. Mustafa Santiago Ali will deliver the keynote speech at the Detroit conference on Thursday. He's Vice President for Environmental Justice, Climate, and Community Revitalization for the National Wildlife Federation. But before that, Ali was with the EPA for 24 years, where he co-founded the agency's Office of Environmental Justice and worked to fight the impact of pollution on impoverished towns and neighborhoods. He also spent time working for Congressman John Conyers. Mustafa Ali, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Let us start by getting a working definition of environmental justice. It's been your life work. And in your biography for this upcoming conference, it notes your work's grounded in the 17 principles of the environmental justice movement. We can't go all through all 17, but give us a sense of just what environmental justice means to you.
Sure. Environmental justice, you know, if you want sort of the traditional definition, it deals with the disproportionate impact in communities of color and low-income communities and indigenous populations. But what it really means is, you know, that we often place the things that we don't want in our most vulnerable communities. It also deals with having the opportunity to have your voice reflected in the decision-making process, and also making sure that resources are actually going to the communities that need them the most. So, you know, it deals with everything from housing to transportation to environmental issues, public health issues, and jobs, and a little bit more than that. But, you know, when we begin to actually take a holistic look at the impacts, but also the opportunities, then you really understand what environmental justice is all about.
During your career, you've worked on environmental justice in more than 500 communities across the country. Could you give us an example or two of what that work looks like in practice on the ground?
Sure. I mean, and it varies. You know, it could be in a number of communities working on lead-related issues and helping to either, you know, mitigate some of the impacts that are happening. It could be in, you know, areas where people are dealing with coal-fired power plants and helping them to understand those air emissions, the public health impacts on their lives, the various laws that are in place that they can utilize to get engaged in the process and to help make change happen. It could be working, you know, in North Carolina, as I have, on some of the CAFO issues, the certified animal feeding operations. For those who don't know what that means, hog farms, chicken farms, turkey farms, and the impacts that happen to our water quality in those spaces.
And you helped to found the Environmental Justice Office at the EPA in 1992 during the George H.W. Bush presidency. How has the conversation around environmental justice and the EPA's approach to it evolved over the years since then? What have you seen?
Oh, my goodness. That is such an excellent question. You know, when I first started, it was amazing because you literally had folks who were officials who had, you know, a specific responsibility to protect public health and the environment to tell folks from communities that what they were experiencing wasn't real, that they were either making it up or they were over exaggerating the impacts that were happening. And those were in the early days. And then seeing an evolution slowly start to happen inside the agency and outside, because I also, by the time I was finishing up, also ran 17 federal agencies and departments. But staying with EPA, watching the various sort of training courses be put in place, watching communities building relationships on the inside. Sometimes it took a while. It was really tough. But watching real relationships build throughout the agency. Then watching people begin to formalize environmental justice in the agency and a number of the policies and activities, eventually getting to where the integration of environmental justice was happening throughout the agency. And then, of course, the agency as being a lead sent a signal to the other federal agencies that they began to also integrate environmental justice. And that's when you start to really get to the holistic approach, because the impacts that are happening in communities, of course, the Environmental Protection Agency plays a role in that, but a number of these other agencies also have a significant role to play in helping these communities to move from surviving to thriving.
A lot of years building all of this and assembling all of this, and you left the EPA in 2017 after 24 years at that agency. Why did you leave?
Yeah, that was a tough one because, you know, I kind of grew up in the agency, so it was a really tough decision. But when I saw some of the things that were being proposed and some of the actions that were moving forward by the new administration, I'd never seen anything like this before. And I knew because of all the work of being out there in communities, the effects that it was going to have. I knew they were going to end up making more people sick if this stuff was able to move forward. And I also knew that eventually people would lose their lives. So I decided to stand up and try to do it in a respectful manner, to do it in an opportunity for people to, and when I say people, at that time, Scott Pruitt and the president, to really understand the value that environmental justice brought to the process. And in my resignation letter, some reporters told me that like a million people had read it, I tried to highlight those programs and how critical they were, not just the environmental justice program, but many of the other ones that also played a significant role in these communities. I also tried to help them to understand how resources had been used and how communities had asked for these and played a role in the creation of these, which is really critical. It wasn't bureaucrats thinking up this stuff. These were practitioners on the ground who had worked for years to make sure that just the basics were in place. And we're talking about the basics when we talk about environmental justice. And then I also tied it into real-world examples of how change has happened and why both the programs and the resources were critical in that, so that they would see that there were real opportunities for a new administration to be able to continue to move forward, hopefully in a positive direction. And when I saw some of the things that they were moving forward on and proposing, I knew I couldn't be a part of that because they were moving in a direction that was going to take us backwards and, as I said before, put people's lives in danger.
Where do things stand now with the office, and did they ever fill your position that you know of?
No, they've never filled my position. And it's such a shame also because the office has now been moved. They did not get rid of the office. But what they did do is that they moved the office, which was a national program office, on the same sort of level as the Office of Air and Office of Water, you know, in relationship to the conversations that happened inside the agency. And they've now moved it over into the policy shop a couple levels down so that the voice of the office is muted. And I'll just share this with you also. You know, the importance of the Office of Environmental Justice is that it was very unique, and it was unique in the sense that it came out of a set of recommendations from stakeholders called the Michigan Working Group a number of years ago in the late 80s and the early 90s. So this was probably one of the first times ever in the federal government that the voice of communities played a role in the creation of such a significant entity, even though it was a smaller entity. And it actually gave them a real intersection or an on-ramp, if you will, into what can be a very confusing set of, you know, conversations and, you know, just trying to get into that whole federal bureaucracy and have someone who's there to help walk with you through that and then to allow you to, you know, sort of have the conversations and make the decisions that best represent your communities.
Looking ahead to Thursday, you're the keynote speaker Thursday at the big conference put on by Healing Our Waters, Great Lakes Coalition. It's all centered on environmental justice in the Great Lakes region. What will your message be?
Well, one, as I talk around the country, I'm always helping people to realize that they have power unless they give it away. And that power can play out in lots of different ways. In the civic process, making sure that you are honoring your vote. Never tell anybody who to vote for, but you should be voting for somebody who cares about your communities, and you have to make the decision of whom that is. Also about, you know, some of the real challenges that we have around our water quality. And, you know, we only have so much fresh water, and we should be paying, you know, particular attention and making sure that is being protected, that's being utilized in a proper way, but that it is also affordable. You know, we find that there's this new dynamic that's happening around our country where, one, a lot of folks, because of some of the things that people have been seeing around the country, don't trust our water quality, especially our drinking water. And now a lot of the water is being unaffordable. And then there are all these other dynamics that happen in that space. Unfortunately, sometimes people find themselves in a position where they might actually lose their children because they couldn't pay their water bill, things have been shut off. It's all these different dynamics that are happening in relationship to water. So that's something we have to pay attention to. We have to pay attention also to the algae blooms that are popping up now because of climate change and because of some of these practices, agricultural practices. And I know that the Great Lakes have been paying particular attention to that We also got to make sure that our elected officials understand that we've got this incredible resource there, that we should be making sure that we're putting the funding, again, in place to make sure that those who are trying to protect it, those who are regulating, have what they need to be able to move forward on that. And then, of course, you know, with all the changes that are happening because of climate change, we're going to talk about that as well, and how those could have some additional impacts on folks who are living in the Great Lakes region.
A longtime fighter for environmental justice with years at the EPA and now with the National Wildlife Federation. Mustafa Ali, thank you so much for speaking with us and spending time with us.
Oh, thank you for the incredible work you guys do, and thank you for